following is a reading from a teaching that Ajahn Chah gave to a group of monastics and laypeople in the Hampstead Vihara in London when Ajahn Chah visited the West for the first time. Seekers of goodness who have gathered here, please listen in peace. Listening to the Dhamma in peace means listening with a one-pointed mind, paying attention to what you hear, and then letting go. Listening to the Dhamma is of great benefit. While listening to the Dhamma, we are encouraged to firmly establish both body and mind in samadhi, meditative concentration, because it is one kind of Dhamma practice. In the time of the Buddha, people listened to Dhamma talks intently, with a mind aspiring to real understanding, and some actually realized the Dhamma while listening. This place is well suited to meditation practice. Having stayed here a couple of nights, I can see that it is an important place. On the external level, it is already peaceful. All that remains is the internal level, your hearts and minds. So I ask all of you to make an effort to pay attention. Why have you gathered here to practice meditation? It's because your hearts and minds do not understand what should be understood. In other words, you don't truly know how things are or what is what. You don't know what is wrong and what is right, what it is that brings you suffering and causes you to doubt. So first, you have to make yourselves calm. The reason you have come here to develop calm and restraint is that your hearts and minds are not at ease. Your minds are not calm, not restrained. They are swayed by doubting and agitation. And this is why you have come here today and are now listening to the Dhamma. I would like you to concentrate and listen carefully to what I say, and I ask permission to speak frankly because that's how I am. Please understand that even if I do speak in a forceful manner, I am doing so out of goodwill. I ask your forgiveness if there is anything I say that upsets you, because the customs of Thailand and those of the West are not the same. Actually, speaking a little forcefully can be good because it helps to stir people up who might otherwise be sleepy or drowsy, and rather than rousing themselves to hear the Dhamma, allow themselves to drift instead into complacency, and as a result, never understand anything. Although there may appear to be many ways to practice, really there is only one. As with fruit trees, it is possible to get fruit quickly by planting a cutting, but the tree would not be resilient or long-lasting. Another way is to cultivate a tree right from the seed, which produces a strong and resilient tree. Practice is the same. When I first began to practice, I had problems understanding this. As long as I still didn't know what was what, sitting meditation was a real chore, even bringing me to tears on occasion. Sometimes I would be aiming too high, at others not high enough, never finding the point of balance. To practice in a way that's peaceful means to place the mind neither too high nor too low, but at the point of balance. I can see that it's very confusing for you. Coming from different places and having practiced in different ways with different teachers, coming to practice here, you must be plagued with all kinds of doubts. One teacher says you must practice in one way. Another says you should practice another way. You wonder which method to use, unsure of the essence of the practice. The result is confusion. There are so many teachers and so many teachings that nobody knows how to harmonize their practice. As a result, there is a lot of doubt and uncertainty. So you must try not to think too much. If you do think, then do so with awareness. But so far, your thinking has been done with no awareness. First, you must make your mind calm. Where there is knowing, there is no need to think. Awareness will arise in its place, and this will in turn become wisdom. But the ordinary kind of thinking is not wisdom. It is simply the aimless and unaware wandering of the mind, which inevitably results in agitation. This is not wisdom. At this stage, you don't need to think. You've already done a great deal of thinking at home, haven't you? It just stirs up the heart. You must establish some awareness. Obsessive thinking can even bring you to tears. Just try it out. Getting lost in some train of thought won't lead you to the truth. It's not wisdom. The Buddha was a very wise person. He had learned how to stop thinking. In the same way, you are practicing here in order to stop thinking and thereby arrive at peace. If you are already calm, it is not necessary to think. Wisdom will arise in its place. To meditate, you do not have to think more than to resolve that right now is the time for training the mind and nothing else. Don't let the mind shoot off to the left or the right, to the front or behind, above or below. Our only duty right now is to practice mindfulness of the breathing. Fix your attention at the head and move it down through the body to the tips of the feet, and then back up to the crown of the head. Pass your awareness down through the body, observing with wisdom. We do this to gain an initial understanding of the way the body is. Then begin the meditation, noting that at this time, your sole duty is to observe the inhalations and exhalations. Don't force the breath to be any longer or shorter than normal. Just allow it to continue easily. Don't put any pressure on the breath. Rather, let it flow evenly, letting go with each in-breath and out-breath. You must understand that you are letting go as you do this, but there should still be awareness. You must maintain this awareness, allowing the breath to enter and leave comfortably. There is no need to force the breath. Just allow it to flow easily and naturally. Maintain the resolve that at this time, you have no other duties or responsibilities. Thoughts about what will happen, what you will know or see during the meditation may arise from time to time. But once they arise, just let them cease by themselves. Don't be unduly concerned over them. During the meditation, there is no need to pay attention to sense impressions. Whenever the mind is affected by sense impingement, wherever there is a feeling or sensation in the mind, just let it go. Whether those sensations are good or bad is unimportant. It is not necessary to make anything out of those sensations. Just let them pass away and return your attention to the breath. Maintain the awareness of the breath, entering and leaving. Don't create suffering over the breath, being too long or too short. Simply observe it without trying to control or suppress it in any way. In other words, don't grasp tightly. Allow the breath to continue as it is, and the mind will become calm. As you continue, the mind will gradually lay things down and come to rest, the breath becoming lighter and lighter until it becomes so faint that it seems like it's not there at all. Both the body and the mind will feel light and energized. All that will remain will be a one-pointed knowing. You could say that the mind has changed and reached a state of calm. If the mind is agitated, set up mindfulness and inhale deeply till there is no space left to store any air. Then release it all completely until none remains. Follow this with another deep inhalation until you are full, then release the air again. Do this two or three times, then re-establish concentration. The mind should be calmer. Repeat the process on every occasion that sense impressions cause agitation in the mind. Similarly, with walking meditation, if while walking the mind becomes agitated, stop still, calm the mind, re-establish the awareness with the meditation object, and then continue walking. Sitting and walking meditation are in essence the same, differing only in terms of the physical posture used. Sometimes there may be doubt, so you must have mindfulness to be the one who knows, continually following and examining the agitated mind in whatever form it takes. This is to have sati, which watches over and takes care of the mind. You must maintain this knowing and not be careless or wander astray, no matter what condition the mind takes on. The trick is to have sati taking control and supervising the mind. Once the mind is unified with sati, a new kind of awareness will emerge. The mind that has developed calm is held in check by that calm. Just like a chicken held in a coop. The chicken is unable to wander outside, but it can still move around within the coop. Its walking to and fro doesn't get it into trouble because it is restrained by the coop. Likewise, the awareness that takes place when the mind has sati and is calm does not cause trouble. None of the thoughts or feelings that take place within the calm mind can cause harm or disturbance. Some people don't want to experience any thoughts or feelings at all, but this is going too far. Feelings arise within the state of calm. The mind is both experiencing feelings and calm at the same time, without being disturbed. When there is calm like this, there are no harmful consequences. Problems occur when the chicken gets out of the coop. For instance, you may be watching the breath entering and leaving, and then forget yourself, allowing the mind to wander away from the breath, back home, off to the shops, or to any number of different places. Maybe even half an hour may pass before you suddenly realize you're supposed to be practicing meditation and reprimand yourself for your lack of mindfulness. This is where you have to be really careful, because this is where the chicken gets out of the coop. The mind leaves its base of calm. You must take care to maintain the awareness with sati and try to pull the mind back. Although I use the words, pull the mind back, in fact, the mind doesn't really go anywhere. Only the object of awareness has changed. You must make the mind stay right here and now. As long as there is sati, there will be presence of mind. It seems like you are pulling the mind back, but really, it hasn't gone anywhere. It has simply changed a little. It seems that the mind goes here and there, but in fact, the change occurs right at the one spot. When sati is regained, in a flash, you are back with the mind, without it having to be brought from anywhere. When there is total knowing, a continuous and unbroken awareness at each and every moment, this is called presence of mind. If your attention drifts from the breath to other places, then the knowing is broken. Whenever there is awareness of the breath, the mind is there. With just the breath and this even and continuous awareness, you have presence of mind. There must be both sati and sampajanya. Sati is recollection and sampajanya is self-awareness. Right now, you are clearly aware of the breath. This exercise of watching the breath helps sati and sampajanya develop together. They share the work. Having both sati and sampajanya is like having two workers to lift a heavy plank of wood. Suppose there are two people trying to lift some heavy planks, but the weight is so great that they have to strain too hard and it's almost unendurable. Then another person, imbued with goodwill, sees them and rushes in to help. In the same way, when there is sati and sampajanya, mindfulness and self-awareness, wisdom will arise at the same place to help out. Then all three of them support each other. With wisdom, there will be an understanding of sense objects. For instance, during the meditation, sense objects are experienced which give rise to feelings and moods. You may start to think of a friend, but then wisdom should immediately counter with, it doesn't matter, forget it, stop. Or if there are thoughts about where you will go tomorrow, then the response would be, I'm not interested, I don't want to concern myself with such things now. Maybe you start thinking about other people. Then you should think, no, I don't want to get involved. Just let go. Or, it's all uncertain and never a sure thing. This is how you should deal with things in meditation, recognizing them as not sure, and maintaining this kind of awareness. You must give up all the thinking, the inner dialogue and the doubting. Don't get caught up in these things during the meditation. In the end, all that will remain in the mind, in its purest form, are sati, mindfulness, sampajanya, self-awareness, and panya, wisdom. Whenever these things weaken, doubts will arise. Try to abandon those doubts immediately, leaving only mindfulness, clear comprehension, and wisdom. Try to develop mindfulness like this until it can be maintained at all times. Then you will understand sati, sampajanya, and samadhi thoroughly. When focusing the attention at this point, you will see sati, sampajanya, samadhi, and panya together. Whether you are attracted to or repelled by external sense objects, you will be able to tell yourself, it's not sure, it's not sure. Either way, they are just hindrances to be swept away till the mind is clean. All that should remain is mindfulness, self-awareness, concentration, the firm and unwavering mind, and wisdom. For the time being, I will say just this much on the subject of meditation. Now I shall speak about the tools or aids to meditation. There should be metta, loving-kindness, in your heart. In other words, the qualities of generosity, kindness, and helpfulness. These qualities should be maintained as the foundation for mental purity. For example, begin doing away with lobha, or selfishness, through giving. When people are selfish, they aren't happy. Selfishness leads to a sense of discontent, and yet people tend to be very selfish without realizing how it affects them. You can experience this at any time, especially when you are hungry. Suppose you get some apples and you have the opportunity to share them with a friend. You think it over for a while, and sure, the intention to give is there all right, but you want to give the smaller one. To give the big one would be, well, such a shame. It's hard to think straight. You tell them to go ahead and take one, but then you say, take this one, and give them the smaller apple. This is one form of selfishness that people usually don't notice. Have you ever been like this? You really have to go against the grain to give. Even though you may really only want to give the smaller apple, you must force yourself to give away the bigger one. Of course, once you have given it to your friend, you feel good inside. Training the mind by going against the grain in this way requires self-discipline. You must know how to give and how to give up, not allowing selfishness to stick. Once you learn how to give, if you are still hesitating over which fruit to give, then while you are deliberating, you will be troubled. And even if you give the bigger one, there will still be a sense of reluctance. But as soon as you firmly decide to give the bigger one, the matter is over and done with. This is going against the grain in the right way. Doing this, you win mastery over yourself. If you can't do it, you will be a victim of yourself and continue to be selfish. All of us have been selfish in the past. This is a defilement which needs to be cut off. In the Pali scriptures, giving is called dana. It means bringing happiness to others. It is one of those conditions that help to cleanse the mind from defilement. Reflect on this and develop it in your practice. You may think that practicing like this involves hounding yourself, but it doesn't really. Actually, it's hounding craving and the defilements. If defilements arise within you, you have to do something to remedy them. Defilements are like a stray cat. If you give it as much food as it wants, it will always be coming around looking for more food. But if you stop feeding it, after a couple of days, it'll stop coming around. It's the same with the defilements. they won't come to disturb you. They'll leave your mind in peace. So rather than being afraid of the defilements, make the defilements afraid of you. To make the defilements afraid of you, you must see the Dhamma within your minds. Where does the Dhamma arise? It arises with our knowing and understanding in this way. Everyone is able to know and understand the Dhamma. It's not something that has to be found in books. You don't have to do a lot of study to see it. Just reflect right now, and you can see what I am talking about. Everybody can see it because it exists right within our hearts. Everybody has defilements, don't they? If you are able to see them, then you can understand. In the past, you've looked after and pampered your defilements, but now you must know your defilements and not allow them to come and bother you. The next constituent of practice is virtue, sila. Virtue watches over and nurtures the practice in the same way as parents look after their children. Maintaining virtue means not only to avoid harming others, but also to help and encourage them. At the very least, you should maintain the five precepts. They are 1. Not only refraining from killing or deliberately harming others, but also to spread goodwill towards all beings. 2. To be honest, refraining from infringing on the rights of others, in other words, not stealing. 3. Knowing moderation in sexual relations. In the household life, there exists the family structure based around husband and wife. Know who your husband or wife is, know moderation, and know the proper bounds of sexual activity. Some people don't know the limits. One husband or wife isn't enough. They have to have a second or third. The way I see it, you can't consume even one partner completely, so to have two or three is just plain indulgence. You must try to cleanse the mind and train it to know moderation. Knowing moderation is true purity. Without it, there are no limits to your behavior. When eating delicious food, don't dwell too much on how it tastes. Think of your stomach and consider how much is appropriate to its needs. If you eat too much, you get trouble. So you must know moderation. Moderation is the best way. Just one partner is enough. Two or three is an indulgence and will only cause problems. 4. To be honest in speech. This is also a tool for eradicating defilements. You must be honest and straight, truthful and upright. 5. To refrain from taking intoxicants. You must know restraint and preferably give these things up altogether. People are already intoxicated enough with their families, relatives and friends, material possessions, wealth and all the rest of it. That's quite enough already without making things worse by taking intoxicants as well. These things just create darkness in the mind. Those who take large amounts should try to gradually cut down and eventually give it up altogether. Maybe I should ask your forgiveness, but my speaking in this way is out of concern for your benefit, so that you can understand that which is good. You need to know what is what. What are the things that are oppressing you in your everyday lives? What are the actions which cause this oppression? Good actions bring good results, and bad actions bring bad results. These are the causes. Once virtue is pure, there will be a sense of honesty and kindness towards others. This will bring about contentment and freedom from worries and remorse. Remorse resulting from aggressiveness and hurtful behavior will not be there. This is a form of happiness, which is almost like a heavenly state. There is comfort. You eat and sleep in comfort with the happiness arising from virtue. Happiness is the result. Maintaining virtue is the cause. This is a principle of Dhamma practice, refraining from bad actions so that goodness can arise. If virtue is maintained in this way, evil will disappear and good will arise in its place. This is the result of right practice. The remainder of this talk, The Way to Practice, can be found in a collection of teachings with the title Meditation. The next reading is an excerpt from a teaching given by Ajahn Anand, a senior disciple of Ajahn Chah. The talk has the title Samadhi for Liberation. To understand this talk, it will be necessary to learn a few Pali terms. Ajahn Anand will be using the word piti, which means rapture, sukha, which means tranquility. He will also refer to the words kanika samadhi, which is momentary concentration, upajara samadhi, which means neighboring on jhana, and jhana, a deep state of absorption. When the heart has been brought to peace through repetition of the mantra Buddho in conjunction with the in and out breathing, then we no longer need to maintain this mantra in mind. With the heart at ease, peaceful and still, we can just simply be aware of the breath coming in and the breath going out. When the heart is peaceful and still, various physical sensations will manifest within. Sometimes we may feel that the body is expanding as we sit, filling the whole room or meditation hall. The body can seem to enlarge so much that we feel it is touching the ceiling. We might also feel tingling sensations or waves of rapturous energy thrilling throughout the body, causing the hair to stand on end. If this rapture, or piti, is strong, the body can seem light or weightless, as if it were floating in space. With this experience of piti, the body feels light and tranquil, the mind peaceful and still. This experience of momentary peacefulness, where the mind has entered a slightly concentrated state, is called kanika samadhi, or momentary samadhi. If this state of tranquility lasts longer, for example, 5, 10, 15 or even 30 minutes, then the heart enters a deeper state of peace called upajara samadhi. This is a state of concentration that is neighboring or on the verge of entering the total stillness and serenity of jhana. When the heart settles into the peace of upajara samadhi through practicing mindfulness of breathing, there is an awareness of inner calm and stillness. At this level of concentration, the mind is not yet completely still. It can be compared to the pendulum of a clock swinging slightly to the left and right. There's a slight amount of mental activity and a modicum of thinking, but mostly the mind is peaceful. This movement of the mind is the activity of vitaka and vichara towards the meditation object. Vitaka is the initial application of the mind that takes up or focuses upon the sensation of breathing. And vichara is the sustained activity of keeping the breath in mind. Feelings of piti and sukha, rapture and bliss, also arise in upajara samadhi. In upajara samadhi, one is saturated in sukha, characterized by feelings of internal strength and stability. Sukha can be distinguished from rapture by the deep contentment it generates. However profound rapture may be, unlike the experience of sukha, it doesn't induce feelings of inner contentment. When this experience of sukha becomes very powerful, there is no longer any movement of the mind. It rests within, peaceful and still, no longer swinging left and right. Even if we want the mind to think, it doesn't. There is no longer any interest in external things. The mind no longer registers sense impressions. It has no concern for external experience. The mind will not go out, and impressions from the outside won't reach in. No thoughts arise at this stage. The activity of vitaka and vichara is not on the level of thinking, only a little rapture remains. As rapture and sukha become more distinct, the mind becomes more peaceful. With this attainment of inner stillness, the mind enters a state of unification, or one-pointedness, called ekagata, or jhana. The five conditioning factors for the realization of full absorption, vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata, have now been brought to completion, and the mind enters first jhana. I will only explain up to here for now. Vitaka is usually understood to mean thinking, but this is not the case. Vitaka is the initial activity of taking up or focusing on the meditation object, such as the breath. Outside the context of meditation practice, vichara also implies thinking and mental proliferation. In the practice of mindfulness of breathing, however, vichara is the activity of staying single-mindedly with the breath. Maintaining a constant awareness as it comes in and out, without straying to other matters. Vichara keeps up this constant, unwavering focus until the heart becomes peaceful and possessed of rapture, tranquility, and then ekagata, one-pointedness. When we are skilled and proficient in the practice of mindfulness of breathing, then the four foundations of mindfulness will naturally be brought to perfection. Mindfulness of breathing is the king of all meditation methods, and its frequent practice and cultivation brings great fruit and benefits. Sometimes we may use other methods of meditation, and these bring results in the same way. Rapture arises leading to Kanika Samadhi and so on. For example, we can recollect the virtues of the Buddha as our theme of meditation. We can recite the verses from the daily devotional chanting, recollecting that the Buddha is the supremely enlightened one who is pure and free from defilement, self-attained and possessing the boundless virtue of purity, loving-kindness and great compassion. If we devote our hearts to these reflections, then rapture will arise. The state where rapture arises in momentary flashes can be called Kanika Samadhi. And if rapture is sustained for a longer period of time, the experience can be called Upajara Samadhi. The 10 recollections are themes of reflective meditation that include the recollection of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and also the contemplation of death. These reflective meditations are capable of bringing results to the level of Upajara Samadhi. However, as they imply thinking, these contemplations cannot lead the mind into jhana, although they do provide a good foundation for it. If we practice these reflective meditations, then the power of concentration will grow by itself. However, by practicing mindfulness of breathing or the contemplation of the elements, it is possible for the mind to become peaceful and unified. The remainder of this talk, Samadhi for Liberation by Ajahn Anand, can be found in the collection of teachings, Seeking Butoh.